Welcome, everybody. This is How to English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given where possible. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Are you ready for a new episode of the podcast?
I am. It's episode 42. It's called Exam Skills.
I know, that is so exciting. I have been waiting for such a long time to cover this topic.
And now we are doing it. So how do you feel about exams, Gav? Do you like taking exams?
I do not enjoy taking exams.
Emphasis on the do not.
But I am very happy to teach my students if that's what they want to do.
Do you like teaching exams then?
I quite like teaching exams because you've got a very clear goal. It's a bit more constrained.
Yeah.
In that you've got a target, you're very focused, there's a set lexus of language that you need to give to the students.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, they need to learn very specific language, which is at this particular level, which they will use in their speaking, their writing, their reading, and they will need to listen for this language.
I'm interested you say this because from what I know about your teaching techniques, you're a kind of out-of-the-box, spontaneous, no-boundaries kind of person. So now you're saying you quite like the limitations of an exam courses?
Well, every coin has two sides. And yeah, I think you can still be quite free with your teaching and learning of exams. It doesn't have to be prescriptive. You sit down, you fill the gaps, you just do essay after essay after essay. It can be a lot more creative than that.
And it can be fun. I've taught exam classes where it's been a lot of fun, like running around. And and I think the students were a bit surprised at first because they were expecting something very academic, focused, serious. But it was maybe a bit more memorable to teach it in that kind of way, like having fun. It doesn't have to be. So
did they still pass?
It's a long time ago. I think they were good. It was sort of the average pass-fail level. So, yes,
okay,
they did.
That's not bad. I thought you were going to say they passed with flying colours.
No, I think it's very hard to have 100% pass rate on an exam course for a teacher.
So
there weren't a load of fails
as
anyway.
As much on the students as it depends on the teacher.
Of course.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, of course
it does. The responsibility is with both of them.
Yeah, but I think the main point is that you can have fun on an exam course.
I agree. Absolutely.
It's funny you say that you quite enjoy teaching exam classes. I'm not a huge fan of exam classes.
Are you not?
Because of the reasons you've said.
Oh.
Because they are so focused and you've got that limitation. And it just seems once you've done it once, it's sort of the same again if you have a few different, you know, classes. I once had three CAE classes in one day, one after the other, and they were on the same book at the same time, and it was just very prescriptive.
Okay, but that makes teaching easier.
Easier, maybe not as interesting.
Yeah, but I still think once you know the materials, then you can get more creative with them.
Maybe that was what I didn't do. I didn't make it as fun as it could have
been.
So, Gav.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you a bit about exam skills
and
what students need to do. Let's start with which, Gav? Which exam?
Well, there are two exams that come to mind, I think, for most teachers and students. So you've got the IELTS exam and you've got the TOEFL exam.
Okay.
Now, as you know, the IELTS exam is the International English Language Exam testing system. It's focused on British English and accepted in institutions all over the world. So it's divided into two. Do you remember what they are?
Nope.
Academic and general.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one is the TOEFL exam, which is focused on American English.
Uh-huh.
And it's a requirement for over 900 universities and other institutions in more than 130 countries.
So did you say these are the two main ones?
Well, they're the two that come to mind.
What about the Cambridge exams?
Well, we can talk about the Cambridge exams as well. If you want to talk about Cambridge, you've got, what's the top one? Do you remember?
CPE.
That's it. CPE exam. So now it's actually called the C2 proficiency exam, which is for senior professionals or academics studying on postgraduate or PhD programs. Below that one?
CAE.
Yes. formerly called CAE, which is actually called C1 Advanced Exam.
Right. I've got to get up to date here.
I know. There's so much to learn. As you know, these two exams, as well as the other exams, are all divided into four parts.
Mm.
And what are those four different parts, Em?
Listening, writing, speaking. And they combined the use of English and the reading, didn't they, together?
Yeah, it's just so reading now.
Now it's just, well, it's reading and use of English.
That's it, yeah. For all of those exams, in fact. Except the TOEFL exam doesn't have a writing test.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, they're the same. According to schoolapply.com, IELTS, International English Language Testing System, focuses on British English.
Oh.
Accepted in thousands of institutions in over 140 countries. Divided into either academic or general assessment and is 2 hours, 45 minutes long, has some short answers and an essay section, which is different from the TOEFL exam, which is the test of English as a foreign language, focusing on American English. It's the requirement for over 900 universities and other institutions in more than 130 countries.
Wow.
And it's a multiple choice exam.
What one is this again?
The TOEFL.
Oh, this is the TOEFL. Sorry. Okay.
And takes about 4 hours.
Right, okay. Mm. So coming back to my question, which exam do people take and for which reasons?
Well, the IELTS would be more, I guess, European, whereas the TOEFL tends to be more American.
Okay, so depending on if you're doing it for a job, which actually follows into my why question, like why are you going to take this exam? So maybe for a job or for educational reasons to get into a college or a university, something like that.
So if you think back to your students, what would the majority of them taking the courses for, these
jobs,
exams?
I would say mostly. Jobs, promotions, positions where they needed to show a level of English.
Okay.
Occasionally just for their own gain, just to see what they are able to achieve
as
a kind of target for a course that wasn't really with the target.
So they wanted to see what level their English was. They wanted to maybe test themselves
just,
and have a certificate at the end to prove that they'd achieved that.
Exactly. To push themselves to achieve something.
But I think you also worked for the Cambridge Centre. Didn't you do some exam testing?
Yes.
And they must have been, what, teenagers? A lot of them.
Yeah, I think that was actually in the some European countries, it's mandatory for students to take it.
Ah.
Italy, for example.
So that it's actually built into the school curriculum.
Mm.
Yeah, because I was going to mention there are some earlier exams. You've got, for example, do you remember the starters, movers and flyers?
Yeah.
Do you remember all the little ones running around? Tell
How
us about
to
that.
How to make exams attractive to children. Call it flyers, movers, starters. It's a great stepping stone to how to, you know, go through to the harder ones at the end.
Okay.
I heard you did some invigilation.
I did. That was quite a long time ago. And I think it was for the FCE exam. I remember there was about 10 students. There was this moment where it went very, very quiet and they were all studying very hard. I think they were doing the writing task. And I realised they had 1 hour left. And obviously as an invigilator, I have to say, you know, how much time's left. Mm-hmm. So I suddenly shouted, okay, everybody, you've got 1 hour left. And you just in the fear and fright and how high they jumped.
You made them all jump.
I did, but I didn't. I wonder if it really helped them because it might have got the adrenaline pumping again.
Maybe. Yeah, you got to say it at some point. So.
I think so. Yeah, that's a good point, actually, that when you're doing exams, there is always or there should always be a clock directly in front of you so you can keep track of the time because it's so important to keep an eye on how much time you've got left. If think about what part of the exam you're in and plan your time very carefully.
I think that is one of the rules, isn't it? That you have to have a clock showing visibly. You have to have arrows to where your room is. That all of this stuff has to be sort of a checklist of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the which and the why and the who. But what about the when, Gav? When is a good time to do an exam?
In the morning.
Okay.
Is that what you mean? What do you mean, when in your life?
Well, I think we've discussed a bit, like, why. Maybe the why and the when are connected.
Oh, okay.
For jobs and, you know, university. Maybe that sort of time is good. But, yeah, maybe when is a good time to actually take it, because you can choose, can't you, your exam time?
Yeah, yeah, I think the times of the exams are posted every month. So you go to the centre online and you see when the tests are available.
Mm.
Also, keep in mind that the speaking test is often on a different day. I think they often have it on a Saturday.
Mm.
So I think the exam itself is usually 4 hours. I've actually got details. Well, do you want to hear some of the details?
Give us some details. Go on.
I love telling you details. So the IELTS is 2 hours and 45 minutes long. And as I said, the speaking is on a different day. That's all according to schoolapply.com. This reminds me of an anecdote where I said to my student beforehand, what you should do is call me on the day of your exam so that we can practice your speaking before you actually get there and do the speaking test. I think it was on the Saturday. And so, she called me up in the morning and she said, I'm really nervous. And I said, well, tell me about your family. Tell me what your favourite sport is. What do you like doing in the afternoons, etc.
Really good.
And it really helped her to loosen up her English and start thinking about, OK, I need to have a conversation and be interactive during the exams. That's a really good tip.
Listening section. I think the main thing to focus on as you're teaching it and learning it is to recognise these distractors, they call them. I always think of Harry Potter, like the Dementors.
Oh.
The distractors.
OK.
Look for the distractors. I don't know what that accent is, sorry. They're like the evil type of manipulating language that makes you think it's the answer, but it's not the answer.
Is that where they say, and the train will arrive at not 2 o'clock, not 3:15, but 4:45?
That's exactly right. Or usually for breakfast, I have a croissant and fruit, but today I had cereal. And you're listening out for food, thinking it's going to be the croissant and the fruit, but it's not, it's the cereal.
Lots of distractors in the listening,
And it's once you know the trick, then I think it's fine. You know what's coming and you recognise it before you do it by going online and listen to a podcast or something like that, just to get your juices or your brain in gear.
That's true. That's a really good tip, actually. Yeah,
I was going to come to tips later, actually. So okay, we shouldn't
I'm
say
peppering the episode with tips.
All right.
So both the IELTS and TOEFL are divided into four language skills, as you told me: listening, reading, writing, and speaking. Both are paper-based or computer-delivered, IBT, and they are exams for all levels, which is different from the Cambridge ones.
Oh, I see.
Because
okay.
if you think of the, you've got the C2, the C1, the B2, which is FCE, and then you've got all the others, then the IELTS and the TOEFL are for everybody to take,
and then you
get a score based on your level.
Uh-huh, okay, yes.
And both the IELTS and TOEFL exams are taken for studying, working and migration in Australia, Canada, New Zealand and the UK. However, TOEFL is preferred in the USA.
Good to know. Because I think the Cambridge ones, they do have some, I don't remember how it works, but if you do a C1 exam and you pass with flying colours, you get, as far as I know, you get like a certificate that is for the level you do, but with some little note on it to say that it was this level pass. So you actually passed a higher level than the one you actually took.
So if you took the C1, but your score was a C2, you still only get the C1 exam, but with the points to qualify you.
Yeah, I think it would just say in sort of brackets, this is a C2 level pass,
right?
Something like that. But a lot of people want that certificate to say C1, C2. Or, you know, they want that number actually on the certificate. But that's a sort of big difference, isn't it? And good to point that out, because the others just give you an overall score. So that brings us to how.
Yes. How what?
How? How do you pass?
Well, you go to the centre, or you go online and you take the exam and then you get a score.
Yeah, but you missed out a really big section of it.
What, training?
Yeah. If you're teaching a course of exam students, how do you get them to pass? If you're taking the course as a student, how do you pass?
Well, you typically do a preparation course.
Yes.
Or you study yourself at home.
Yes.
There are some really good books. For IELTS, go for Cambridge or the Barron's student books.
Mm-hmm.
For TOEFL, Kaplan have published some great study books. And for FCE and C1M?
I don't remember the publisher. Ready for series. Ready for first. Ready for advanced. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know if they've got a CPE book. I don't think they have.
And for the proficiency exam, thanks, Em. Cambridge have a really good study book for that.
Okay, that's good. Are you going to put some links in the show notes?
Of course I am.
Uh-huh, good. That's nice.
So Cambridge have some really good books. I've used them.
Make sure they're up to date. I will definitely say, if you've got a friend who says, yeah, I took the CAE 10 years ago, you can use all my books. It's different. It changed in 2015. So just be careful that you've got the most up-to-date materials.
Yes.
Because you don't want to get to the exam and think, this wasn't in the book and I didn't know this part existed and this is different.
Yeah. And also just go online and there's loads of exercises. Again, make sure they say 2020 version of the exam or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it depends a bit which exam you're doing, but you need very specific exam skills. So these are timing yourself to do a part of the exam, like the reading part. And if we talk about reading specifically, you need to improve your skimming skills, where you're searching for information, you're getting an overall idea of what the text is about before you're going back and then finding details in that text.
Yeah.
There's very specific skills that teachers teach the students, and the students can learn from their teachers or themselves.
Yeah, and it can be quite overwhelming, I think, if you're learning it on your own, because there's a lot of information, and not just sort of the grammatical and the language, the vocabulary. There's also all the techniques and the strategies for it. So I think that's what a preparation course is quite good for, combining the language upgrade, but also the strategies. And I find that quite overwhelming as a teacher, even just how much to focus on in the lesson. Try and just do a bit of everything. But in an hour, that's quite hard to focus on, you know, this is how you do the exam. And also, this is a load of new language that you've never seen before. Yeah. And it's a lot of work. And you've got to be prepared to do a lot of homework as a student, I think.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Mm. I think it's as much or perhaps more about the homework you do, and try to do work that will be very focused on the skills that you're trying to improve. So if this week you're doing some listening skills, then go online, go to YouTube. They've got some brilliant activities there. You, for example, put IELTS listening task, do the practice and check the answers. And then if you missed it, go back and think, okay, I need to concentrate. What is this sound? How do I improve my listening? On top of this, I still encourage my students to read as much as possible, watch as much as possible, listen to as much as possible, because you still need a bit of a general idea, especially the higher up the levels you go. So once you're going to those advanced level exams, you don't really know what language you're going to come across.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to have as wide a knowledge of English as you can.
And don't lose your enjoyment of it, I think, as well. If you're just thinking everything you do in English is for an exam, then you're not going to really be motivated to do it. I think it is intense, definitely, but to try and find something you enjoy just for the pure fun of, you know, doing something in English.
It can be fun. So have you got any tips for the Cambridge exams, specifically the reading and grammar sections?
Well, there's some strategies that you need, but I think it's practice, really. Like, yeah, you've got to really be good at the word transformation bit.
Okay, what's a word transformation?
They give you a sentence and then you've got a word you must use, and there's a maximum of 5 words that need to go in this space of the sentence.
Okay,
and you've got to basically rephrase the sentence.
Right.
But using a different construction.
Mm-hmm.
Keyword transformation, they call it. Yeah. So I think just doing a lot of that, like just practicing it, which means you need to know a lot of grammar, you need to know a lot of structures.
Uh-huh.
And also the other one is word formation exercise, where you've got to be really good at knowing suffixes and prefixes, and just keep, again, just keep practicing them. You've got to use dictionaries and check them. So you've got to write a root word, like confuse, and then you've got to make it into confused with an adjective.
Confusion.
Confusion, if it's a noun. They'll give you like information. Yeah, you've got to say misinformation or change it to misinformed.
Okay.
It's really, really hard.
That is hard.
But then, yeah, the other part of that exam is mainly gap fill, where you have to know a lot of the linking words, like prepositions, articles.
Conjunctions.
Conjunctions. And it will be all those words that you don't really focus on but are really important. So yeah, I think that's what I would recommend.
And that's what the examiner is looking for in your writing parts. Have you done one of those exams?
I have. It was really hard.
What level?
I'm trying to remember. I think I tried them all. I went through all the Cambridge exams, from B1 to C2.
Yeah. Did you pass?
I did.
Oh, that's good.
I did pass, but I don't think I got 100% on the C2 one.
Not many people get 100%.
Well, I was hoping I would, but no, I didn't. But I've taught Cambridge C2, and I find it very hard. It's very demanding.
Do you remember any of the papers?
Do I remember any of the papers? Not off the top of my head.
Do you remember that they were all about science the environment and various things? Like, I did them as well. And I remember there was a lot about nature. These are tips that I always give my students. Like, read about biology, read about science, read about technology. They're really good tips for the reading because they often seem to follow that pattern. They're sort of academic, even though it's a general exam course.
Yeah, but they're going to be like something really random, like the life of a honey badger.
Yeah, exactly. You can't really prepare for that, but you can read more papers that are more that style, perhaps, and you'll encounter that language a bit more often.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Try and broaden your vocabulary, which is a really good skill. But
in my experience, they were more about, as I said, science, technology, nature. But again, go online, have a look at some reading tasks. You'll see examples and you'll see what they're like.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Is that the how that you were after? How are they going to pass it in?
Yeah, I think so. If you've got any other tips on how to teach it, on how to study it, is there any other advice?
The only one I've got left is, I think for the speaking, have a look at the speaking exam first. You can always go to the official website of the exam you're taking, and it should have a breakdown of the different parts of it. I remember some of them have a collaborative activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said to my students, you have to have a conversation with your partner. So you could be paired with another student, or there could be two other students. Make sure that you involve the other students. If they're too dominant, take back control in a very polite way and say, oh, that's a great idea, have you considered this? And then you talk about something. It could be things like, you have to choose a present for your mother for her birthday, and you get a choice of several different things, and you say, oh, we could choose this one because, and you give a good reason, and then an expression like, what do you think? Or have you any ideas? Or which do you prefer? And it's all about that. Have a real conversation with somebody. Interacting, making it quite real.
Yeah. Try and remind yourself of that in the exam, because it can seem very artificial. But
yes.
Try and keep it as real as you can, natural as you can, and not be worried about not having an answer. I always tell my students, just if you get a question that's tricky, you don't need to have an answer. You can just start by saying, oh, that's an interesting question. I haven't thought of it before, and I can't really answer that. I don't know. It's sometimes the language around it that they're looking for. It's just how you deal with words, when you don't know how to answer.
That's another brilliant tip. I say to my students, it's not an intelligence test.
Yes.
It's an ability to communicate and also to listen and to respond to people.
Yeah, so just be human, I think, is a good tip.
Yeah, and don't worry if you make mistakes. Just try to repeat the sentence, but correcting the word if possible, and then just carry on and use some nice language, but make sure you're communicating. Also, don't memorise language. Don't sit there and just repeat something by heart. It's all about being spontaneous, creative, and focused on the activity that you're being tested on.
But I also think that they're listening out for certain phrases or certain grammar that they would like, or you should be able to produce at that level. So, for example, like a cleft sentence, like if you can manage in some way to put in, the person who taught me to swim was my father.
Oh, wow.
Or what I really like about living here is the
weather.
Swimming pool or the weather. If you can fit that in somewhere, then it's sort of ding, ding, ding. You know, they're going to listen out for that and think, ooh, that's very good.
Okay, so that ticks the box.
Which I think for some students can be quite stressful to think that way. It depends on how you are as a person. If you think you're capable of just having these sort of phrases up your sleeve that you can then fit in. Mm-hmm. But if you think that's just going to stress you out, then I wouldn't do it.
Yes, okay. And you don't want it to sound too formulaic. So it sounds like you've memorized and you're just reading it off, because that definitely will knock your points down.
No, I mean, that was your point at the beginning. I think, yeah, don't have a script, but try at least to use complicated language. Like, if you can manage third conditional, brilliant. I think I mentioned before, don't lie, because the lie just begets another lie. And you're then...
I think you could lie. If they say, have you got any brothers or sisters? And just invent a brother or sister. Why not? But then, of course, yeah, you should just say, I don't, but I've got lots of cousins. For example, I have a cousin who lives in...
Exactly. That's easier, isn't it? Than just having to... The added stress of having to create someone out of nowhere that's got a job and a family that you've never come up with. You know, it's just so stressful.
That's very true. You know what we haven't talked about?
What?
Writing.
No, we haven't.
Now, writing might be one of the skills I don't teach as well as some people, if I'm honest.
Uh-huh.
But I know somebody who does teach writing very well.
Uh-huh.
His name's Dino, and we've got him as a special guest.
Fantastic.
So let's have a listen to Dino. He's going to talk us through some writing skills and some suggestions, and I'll speak to you in a minute, Em.
All right.
Hello, everyone. First of all, I'd like to say a very, very special thank you to Gavin M for this wonderful opportunity of being on this podcast. My name is Dino, and I have recently launched a course on Udemy about Cambridge exam essay writing. The start of this story begins back in 2003, back when I first started teaching. I was in a first certificate class, and what I noticed is that pretty much all the pupils had the same essay writing process. They would get an essay, they would write the first few words on the first line of the page, and then stop, scratch their heads, scratch their chins, and actually start thinking then. Now, one day, one of the girls, we're going to call her Anna, she asked me the magic questions. Should we be using essay plans? Followed by, what is an essay plan supposed to look like? Now was my first year of teaching. What happened next is predictable. A whole 1 hour full of diagrams, lines, things written all over the whiteboard, wiping the board 10 times, explaining everything that needs to be inside an essay plan. Personally, I love writing. This was automatic for me. The pupils loved it. They said it was fantastic. They left saying, thank you, that was one of the best explanations about essays we've ever had. A couple of weeks later, they had another essay to go and write, and what I saw broke my heart. The pupils got out these notebooks with their diagrams, and they looked at it, and then there's poor Anna, who had asked in the very beginning, and she looks at the diagram as if to say, oh my gosh! And she closes the notebook and starts writing her essay the old way. She writes a few words in the first line and starts scratching her head to think. And I suddenly realized that despite all the efforts, despite the fact that they'd said thank you and they thought it was fantastic, when it came to actually using it, they couldn't do it. Now, it wasn't until about 3 years later, I think it was, they were now proficiency class. It was a late Thursday evening, 8 o'clock, it was pouring with rain outside. They came from school, tired, demotivated, and I asked them, guys, what do you want to do? They said, we don't want to do grammar. And then Anna turns around and opens up this folder that she's carrying around with her, pulls out this little diagram from back 3 years before, and says, I've kept this around for a couple of years, and every time I look at it, it almost makes sense, but it doesn't. Can you show us again what an essay plan is supposed to look like? And at that moment, because now I'd been teaching for 2 or 3 years, I heard what I hadn't heard the first time. What happened is that the first time, I had answered the question, what should an essay plan look like? But today, I suddenly realized that the question really was, where do I start from? It was a cry for help. So I improvised, and I gave them a task. I said, we're going to be doing reverse engineering. The boys laughed and said, what, you mean like alien technology? Uh-huh. So what we did is we got out some essays that they had already written, and taking the existing sentences that they had to extract, let's say, the keywords and create a map or a plan at the site of what their essay was. Then we moved on to brainstorming. And in the very beginning, they could only come up with 5 or 6 words for each topic I gave them. But bit by bit, they got better and better. And by the end of the hour, they were able to come up with 15 or 20 words for each topic that I gave them. And then at the very end, the very last 5 minutes of the lesson, I then took the brainstorming that we just done, the very last one, I converted that into an essay plan. They went home. I told them to write something over the weekend. And the next week, Anna came back. She hadn't done that homework. She'd written something else. An essay from, before she'd come to me. And it was about breast cancer. And it was one of the best essays I have ever read. So this is, let's say, your homework for me. What I want you to do first is go and take an essay you have already written and do reverse engineering. So this means you take your essay, something you have already written, so it doesn't need any new inputs yet. Go and pull it apart and write the words at the side, the key words from each sentence, and map out what exactly it is that you did do in that essay. Once you've finished off your reverse engineering, you'll probably be sitting there saying, what? That's it. There must be more to an essay plan than just that. And the answer there is that then you get to the point where you need the brainstorming to be able to move on to the next stage of your essay plan. But that really requires visual input as well. So for that, I'd recommend you check out my Udemy course. Now in the course, what I go into is about 5 different possible layouts for brainstorming, as well as the full intricate range of all the things needed for writing essays in general to show you the full range of possibilities, followed by a breakdown of each of the different Cambridge exam formats of what you need to do for each one. Now, for more information or for the occasional discount code, follow me on Instagram. My username there is @DinoCoaching. That's @Dino and then coaching with a K, all one word. And I'm looking to see you online. Now, my dream is to see each and every single one of you shining with confidence when it comes to writing essays. Gavin M, over to you.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you, Dino. That was exactly what we needed to hear.
And it made it really interesting because I think writing is quite an overlooked skill, maybe in the exam.
Yep.
And it is quite boring, I think, to teach it. It is just very formulaic in the way the books present it.
Yeah.
So his idea of reverse engineering just, I think, is revolutionary and so much more engaging to work on something that you've actually produced yourself.
Yeah.
Because the books just give you a copy of something, you know, it's not very personal. So I really like the approach and I'm really interested to know more.
And I also like the idea that instead of sitting down and writing the first thing that comes in your head, of course you need to make a solid plan. Nobody can write an essay from scratch. You need to plan that through. So that's really, really important tip. Excellent. So go and find Dino on Instagram @DinoCoaching. That's coaching with a K, to contact him and learn more info about the Cambridge exams. You can improve your writing skills. And you can put in the code HowToEnglishPod this weekend to get a special discount on the exam writing courses available.
And this offer is for this weekend only.
I know, it's so exciting. I think could be great for students and teachers to improve their writing skills.
Excellent. I'm quite tempted myself. I'm really interested in new ways to freshen up teaching skills for writing. I've been looking for something like that for a long time.
It sounds like loads of fun. So, brill. All right. Em?
Gav?
Do you think we've covered exams?
Sort of.
Do you think we missed anything out?
Probably.
All right. So, Em, before we go, I've just got a quick message to say thank you very much. You ready for a bit of positivity?
Definitely.
Okay. So, from Patricia, and she said about last week, she told us what she got from the CELTA, a certificate from Cambridge. And on top of that, valuable techniques to plan better lessons, expertise, experience of teacher trainers and classmates. It was a unique and worthwhile course for sure.
Very true.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Em, for your time.
Thanks, Gav. Thank you. And if anyone out there wants to give us some exam tips, I would really welcome them.
Yeah, I think we would love to get some feedback on this one as well.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your time, Em.
Okay.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.